Hey, I'm here at your Metro PCS store. What's the best deal I can get for switching over?
How does a free smartphone sound?
Sounds good, but is it a tiny smartphone?
Nope, 5-inch HD screen.
Good brand?
Great brand. Samsung, and it's a Galaxy.
So I got a free Samsung Galaxy?
Yeah, you're a tough man to bargain with.
Everyone gets a free Samsung Galaxy On 5 at Metro PCS. Switch today and get a free smartphone after instant rebate. Yes, a free Samsung Galaxy. Metro PCS. Wireless figured out. Coverage not available in some areas. Sales tax not included. Not valid for numbers currently on the T-Mobile network. See store for details, terms and conditions, and network info.
Blog Talk Radio.
We're going to record some interviews. We hope to get among the folks that are here in the memorabilia room at the Embassy Suites, which we enjoyed yesterday, starting our second annual reunion by having a meet and greet here at the Embassy Suites. And we all had a good time, a great time. We had fantastic professional dancers from a local studio here, and they were really entertaining. Great dances. Not many of us old guys can do these dances anymore, but the young ladies, they were having a ball out there on the floor. And we had a singer, and he could sing just about any song that Frank Sinatra sang and Perry Como and all the rest of the great recording artists. So he entertained us, and we had a great time. And today we're having the banquet this evening at 7 p.m., and we have some great guests that will be with us, and we have two folks that we're honoring, and long-time deserving, Captain Bob Wilbur, Also Mr. Vito Borelli. Bob was an Eastern captain, and I think he came aboard. I've got him right here sitting beside me, so I'm going to ask him a few questions, and he can tell you himself when he started with Eastern and a little bit about his background and his family, and his lovely wife Anita is with us. And so we're going to share some stories probably I haven't heard, and I thought I knew a lot about Bob, but at any rate, we're going to ask him a few questions. And Captain Wilbur will be honoring you tonight, and I'm going to turn your microphone on there. Let's see if I can get that thing to come on. Is that... Say hello.
Hello.
Okay, you're live. Okay, Bob. Captain Robert Wilbur, and as of course you know, they were in that hijacking of the DC-9, 1320, Eastern Flight 1320, and that was back in 1970, and his first officer was killed, and of course the training center on 36th Street was named the James Hartley Building. And so we're paying tribute to Bob Wilbur for a very heroic act of flying that airplane and saving the lives of so many folks on it. I think there were probably over 60 people, 73 or something like that. But at any rate, Bob's not been too anxious to talk about that over the years. And his lovely wife, Anita, twisted his arm or his neck, one of the two, and got him to come down here so we could all express our gratitude for what he did. And I'm talking too much, Bob. It's about time for you to say hello. So say hello, and whatever you want to talk about.
Hi, folks. It's a pleasure to be here, and Captain Holland's been very kind in guiding us along the way to this lovely event. And as you said, Neil, this is going to be an interview, so what questions do you have?
Okay. Well, how about, first of all, telling me where you started in aviation? Let's get right down to the roots of how you actually started flying airplanes. Where did that happen?
We were flying model airplanes as a teenager, and finally graduated to the Air Force in 1955. I got wings in commission to fly a C-119 and later on the C-130. I got based in Tennessee for a year and then over in France for 3 years, where we hauled mainly cargo. I got out in June of 59 and came home to Plant City, Florida, and applied to Eastern, and went down to Miami and got in class in August 17th of 1959, and spent just short of 30 years with Eastern, which I enjoyed very much. And
Okay, and you started, you were based in New York the whole time?
I was based in John F. Kennedy Airport, JFK, the whole time I was with Eastern.
I think back in your day it was called Idlewild, wasn't it?
Idlewild, yeah. I think I had one little temporary duty stint, a very short stint down in Miami, I believe it was, but it's so long ago it's difficult to remember details.
Okay, very good. And now, flying, what type of equipment did you first start out on? A Martin or?
A Martin started out on the Martin 404. And then we went to the Constellation and then the Electra. And then did some work on the 727. And eventually, the DC-9 is captain, and then the 727, and the A-300 for a short time, and then the L-1011. That's how I wound up the career.
And when did you retire?
In August, in March 30th of 1994.
94, okay. Mm-hmm. Now, that was not with Eastern, because Eastern wasn't flying, so you retired from which carrier?
Well, after Eastern was closed the doors, we went over and flew for Saudi Arabian Airlines. Was over there for 4.5 years.
Okay, very good. Entirely different flying over there, wasn't it, than domestic flying or around with the Eastern system?
Well, it's amazing because the 1011s that they had were a little different than Eastern's. Their engines were Pratt & Whitney engines, as I recall, and we had Rolls-Royce at Eastern. And the Pratt & Whitney's put out just a little more thrust, which they needed in the hot climates of the desert over there. And but it's amazing because they programmed that airplane to fly a lot of domestic stuff around the Arabian Peninsula. And occasionally we'd get a trip to Germany or France. And when my wife Anita came over, we had a few layovers in Paris, which we enjoyed very much. And
okay, we got some background noise, but that's folks here in the memorabilia room. So you did get to fly outside of Saudi Arabia then?
Yes, we did get to fly outside of Saudi Arabia occasionally. Yes.
Good. Okay. And how long were you with Saudi?
Approximately 4.5 years, I believe it was.
Yeah. 4.5 years, wow.
Sure.
Yeah. So many of the guys that were out after the company folded went to so many different airlines. How many Eastern guys wound up over in Saudi? Do you remember?
To be honest with you, Neil, I can't remember exactly. I know this, that after Eastern closed their doors, there were quite a few folks that came over, drifted over, to join the Saudi.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And if you want names,
No. Just the head count. You know.
Well, I think I told Neil early on that we first got went over on a temporary duty assignment, and that got my foot in the door, and then I got to come back on with a Saudi contract.
Okay. Okay.
I spent the winter of 1989-90 at Newark and on the picket line, and then went back over in early 1990 to fly with him.
Okay.
On a basis.
So you kind of liked the flying over there, didn't you?
I enjoyed it very much, and I had a pretty good rapport with those folks too. I think they wanted me to stay and fly for Royal, but you know, Anita and I think we'd had enough of it, the desert. So we came home after.
Weren't some of the guys? I can't think of their names right offhand, but I remember I used to walk the picket line also, and this one guy was flying for a Sheikh. Or Shake, whatever they call them, and had his own 1011, and really sophisticated, and really dressed out, real beautiful, and he was just flying for that one person. Was that done often, or not many people have?
Well, it's commonplace over there because there are a lot of sheikhs and a lot of money from oil, of course, and they have. The royal family has its own private airline that they fly. They even have one that's outfitted as a emergency medical room because their health is not the best in the world through all of the interbreeding and so forth, I guess, for lack of a better word.
I'll get you to hold this microphone in your hand because sometimes they can't hear you when you back away from that. And
sorry.
I learned this over years and years of broadcasting. This is my fifth year in broadcasting. I'm getting to learn it a little bit. But so many things I want to ask you. I don't know where to start here. But you've taken me through Eastern. I want to know a little bit about your flying with Eastern. Of course, that day of 1970, and I know didn't want to talk too much about that. And George Jen was telling me that he used to fly with you a little bit, and you were one of his favorite captains.
George Jen,
yeah.
Well, I can tell you, I can give you a quick resume of what happened St. Patrick's Day of 1970, if you'd like that.
Yeah, would you please?
All right, well, it was a sequence on the bidding sheet of a four sequence from Newark to Boston, Boston back to Newark, Newark to Boston, and then Boston back to Newark. And my friend and fellow aviator, James E. Hartley, was the co-pilot. I flew the first leg, or he flew the first leg, and I flew the two middle legs of Boston back to Newark and then Newark back to Boston. And he was to pick up the last leg of that way we'd each get a different airport to land on. So we took off on time, and it was a 7:30 shuttle, and we got into the Boston area, air traffic control wise. And I get a call from the flight attendant saying, there's a gentleman back here who wants to see you. And I said, well, how about we talk to him on the ground? So anyway, I said, we can't talk to him now. How about I'll talk to him on the ground? And she says, you don't understand, Captain. He has a gun. So at that point in time, we were instructed to yield to the wishes of the hijacker. Mm-hmm. And I said, well, bring him up then. And she opened the cockpit door, and he entered. And his first words were, where are we going? And I said, well, we're going to Boston, and, that's where our destination is. And he said, no, I don't want to go to Boston. I want you to fly east and let me know when we're in 5 minutes of running out of fuel. And I thought that was a rather strange request. So we disconnected with air traffic control, because when he asked me to make a left turn base leg, they were using runway 27 at Logan Airport that evening, which is a western heading airport, and we were flying east already on a downwind leg. So when he gave me a turn to base, I said, unable at this time. He said, if you have a problem, let me know when you can get back to us. Anyway, after we flew almost 20 miles out from the airport there, I said, look, we're supposed to be landing back there. We don't carry a hell of a lot of fuel. How about letting us turn back in? Not knowing all the time that this guy's idea was suicide. So I said, okay, and I had it on autopilot, and we make a nice gentle turn back to the north and west. About three quarters of the way through the turn, he said, are we on our way back in? And I said, yes, we are. And that's when the gunshots went off. Bang, bang. Sounded like a cap pistol. And it felt like a stinging numbness in my arms to me. And about I whirled around. Jim Hartley was already grappling with him for the weapon. He took it away from him, disabled him, and went comatose. I took the gun and put it in front of the nose wheel steering column. Got back on the radio to air traffic control, and I told them, I said, we need expedient handling. My co-pilot's been shot, and we need to get on the ground. I need a doctor and the police to meet the airplane. And so they gave us expedient handling. We landed the airplane and got to the gate, gate 12 up there. I still remember the farthest gate they could put us on. Well, mm-hmm. I didn't mention that we were on final approach, about a mile out, the guy starts to get up, and I took the gun and hit him over the head with it, and he laid back down. And then we got her on the ground and went to the gate. We put the air stairs down on the DC-9, so the people could come up, and. I should have said that when the guy went down, the hijacker went down, he kicked the door open. He broke the door of the DC-9 so that it was open about 6 to 8 inches. And we did have the passengers' undivided attention.
Yeah.
And the flight attendants did a wonderful job of keeping them calm and reassured. So mm-hmm. we got on the ground and to the gate. And I said, when the police came up, I said, get this guy out of here and get him to the hospital. I didn't know what condition he was in at that time. And that's about the summation of it.
Yeah, wow. That's. Yeah.
But you're right. I don't talk about it that much.
I know you don't. And I'm sure you've been asked many, many, many times by those that flew with you and all. And, you know, there are some people that I used to fly with that were that had some tragic things happen to them in World War II.
Yeah.
And they, too, were very reluctant to say anything about it. You had to drag it out of them. I can understand that. But how long, about how long was the flight, just out of curiosity, from the time you took off to the time you came back under this circumstance?
The Boston shuttle, generally speaking, were just about 60 minutes, an hour, each way. Maybe an hour and five going southbound with the wind factor, but you're generally right around an hour.
An hour.
Mm-hmm.
And again, how long into the flight did all of this start taking place?
Well, this was about 30 to 45 minutes is when this first came about. We had just come into the Boston Air Traffic Control area. And, you know, they gave us expedient handling and so to get back in.
Wow.
Yeah.
I think the next year that you were presented with a very prestigious award from, I call it the Medal of Honor of Commercial Aviation Award from the Dardanelles, and that was done, where was that done? And you?
I think that was up at Maxwell Air Force Base in Alabama where we went for that meeting and presentation. But, you know, it's so funny. I remember so little about it. It's, so many years have passed. And
How many years has passed? Well, I can count it from 70.
It's 46. 46
years.
Plus.
Yeah.
It was 46 years this past March 17th.
Yeah. Wow.
Yeah.
Now, you know, I of course, a lot of folks have seen the movie Sully and The Miracle on the Hudson and what happened there. And did you see it, by the way?
I haven't seen it yet, but I understand he did a fine job, and
yeah.
he did his job, just like I did my job.
Yeah, yeah.
You know?
And there's some quick decisions, and you really need to see that movie.
Okay.
But what I heard you just tell me, somebody ought to pick this up as a movie, too. George Jenn ought to write a novel, not a novel, but a book about your happenings, and I think your son might be writing a book on this.
Yes, he is. My son is putting some facts and figures together to write a book.
Yeah,
we have a copy of the tower tape,
okay.
etc. And it's funny because when Rob asked me a question, a technical question about the DC-9, I have trouble answering because it's been so long.
I know
ago.
It. Yeah.
You know, counting training, I was on the DC-9 all of 4 to 5 months.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, and after that, it was. So I haven't seen the DC-9 in a long time. And so anyway, but it's an interesting thing. I think I hope it comes to fruition.
Yeah. Yeah, I do, too. And of course, we want to be interviewing you as soon as it comes out because we want to talk to your son and promote your book, too, on the radio show.
Well,
just like we've promoted George Jenn's book, Final Destination, and it's done real well. As a matter of fact, as you probably know, they're making a movie out of that. Hollywood.
I couldn't put the book down. I couldn't put it down.
Yeah, Hollywood bought it.
It's
yeah.
a great book, and I wish him great success with it. By the way, our son will be here for this evening's festivities.
All right.
And I'm sure he'll be ready to answer any questions you might have.
Okay, well, we'll do another radio show. But I want to talk to Anita, too. She's sitting right beside you here in the memorabilia room, and I want to find out from her where she was when all of this took place. And
well, she's got a lot to tell you, I'm sure.
Pass the phone over to her and put the headset on Anita, and she'll talk to us a little bit about where she was. And, come on over here and sit right beside you. Yeah. We call this kitchen table radio sometimes, you know.
I was at home. Rob, our son Rob, was, I think, 2.5, and Allison was three and a half. And I got a telephone call from a reporter from California. And I answered the phone, and he asked me if Bob was a pilot for Eastern Airlines. I said yes, and he identified himself. And the funny part is we had an unlisted phone number. How he got it, I don't know. And he said, you know, there was a hijacking. And I said, no, I didn't know that. And he said, was your husband the pilot or the co-pilot? I said, where? What are you talking about? And he told me the flight number, and I knew his flight number. And I said, he's the pilot. And he said, oh, because I don't think the co-pilot made it. Was very upsetting because Bob and I were friends with he and his wife, Becky.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And the funny thing is Bob and I never befriended any of his co-pilots or, you know, it was business there and then our friends locally. But we happened to like Jim and Becky.
Had Bob flown a lot of trips? Bob, had you flown a lot of trips with Jim?
Several.
Just that month.
Yeah.
Just that shuttle.
Okay.
So anyway, as he's asking me this question, my mother, thank God, was visiting, and she had the news on, and a news break came out on about the hijacking. The doorbell was ringing, and it was Eastern Airlines coming to the door, a rep.
Mm-hmm.
And friends of ours, JP and Reggie Tristani, a pilot, came with his wife because she thought she would babysit the girls, mm-hmm. My son and daughter. But my mother was there. So she came to Boston with me. Eastern just said, the rep said, pack a bag. We're taking you to Boston. So I left my children with my mother and went to Boston. I was in Boston with Bob, I guess, for the 28 days he was there. Yeah, they had to prepare his right arm because the bullet exited his right arm, and that had to be healed enough in order for them to take a skin and do, you know, a skin graft. And that's what he has, a skin graft.
Yeah.
And when he was shot,
I can see it there.
It's in his left arm. That fortunately, his surgeon, Dr. Ashby Moncur, said to, of course, the police went into the operating room because they wanted the bullet for evidence. And Dr. Moncur tried to get the bullet out and looked at the police officer and said, if I dig anymore, I'll destroy his arm. He said, leave it. He was very lucky, and he just patched him. And, you know, he was on sick leave for a while, had physical therapy in both arms and whatever. And then after a few months, he was fine.
Yeah.
So I, unlike him, when he was in the hospital bed, I mean, Eastern set up, you know, all the news, you know.
Yeah.
All the news, all the reporters, the photographers, everything. And they asked me all about him, our life, whatever. And one question was, do you want your husband to quit flying?
Mm-hmm.
And my answer was, if he quit flying, how would you get here?
Yeah, beautiful answer.
And he just looked.
Yeah.
And, well, I... Well, the other airline sent very nice notes to both of us, you know,
mm-hmm.
because we mm-hmm. kept our cool at that time, which
mm-hmm.
was very unusual, because I'm Italian, I'm not really cool. I'm a little emotional, but I promised I would be calm and give you as much information as I could.
Well, this is a wealth of information that I don't think a lot of folks, well, I know I didn't know, and I've read a lot about the event, and there's one thing that just popped into my mind. The memory is so short when you get our age, right, Bob? I think you're probably in your 60s now. Try 82, he said. Yeah, but, you know, they did do a pretty good story on Sully's wife after the landing. She didn't know about what had happened.
Mm-hmm.
And it was a good presentation of the wife and the children and how the, all the press comes up to the house and all that, you know. And and it was a very good produced movie with Clint Eastwood doing that. Mm-hmm. And, of course, he's done some good work. But and Tom Hanks did a good job. I don't know who I would pick for Bob Wilbert, though. Johnny Carson is already gone. But
yeah.
I always call Bob Johnny Carson because he reminds me of Johnny Carson. Mm-hmm. Has he ever been told that, Anita?
Yes, as a matter of fact, he met Johnny Carson before we got married. We were very, very good friends with Yankee baseball players. They lived in our building in Kew Gardens. Roger Maris, Hal Renneff. My roommate married Hal Renneff, a relief pitcher. And they said the same thing. So one of their friends who was a police officer, lieutenant or captain or whatever, he said, "I know Johnny. I'll take you to meet him." And he did. He took him and he met him, you know, after backstage after one of his shows.
Uh-huh.
And he said, "Well, if I ever need a replacement, would you replace me?" So, you, could you see Bob replacing him?
Yeah.
He's so shy. But anyway, yes. But who would? I don't know.
Yeah.
And this is just dreaming. But me, I'm so proud of him.
Yeah.
That, and he's always, he never wanted to talk about anything. But
well, Eastern Airlines is proud of him, too. As a matter of fact, at our last convention, you weren't there, Anita. Mm-hmm. And I understand your situation. You
had family.
But Bob was totally surprised. I think he was surprised last year when your friend, Captain Ed Slain, got up. And Bob was sitting there having dinner with the rest of us. And I think totally unaware of what Ed was about to say. Shocked the heck out of him. But it impressed the president of the new Eastern Airlines, Ed Weagle, and his wife, Susan, who was there. And they'll be here tonight. We have the presentation to Bob. And,
I'm so thrilled.
Yeah.
As a matter of fact, as I was saying, you know, being his wife, of course, and I'm so proud of him, but for months I cried thinking he was all alone.
Yeah.
All alone, bleeding.
Yeah.
And what if he had panicked and hadn't done the right thing? And when the Eastern pilots checked the cockpit and everything and how bloody it was, but they said he landed the airplane and went through all of the procedure that you're supposed to do.
Yeah.
Shut everything down or whatever you do. And they couldn't believe it. He just landed it. And then when they saw him, and I understand some of the passengers, my daughter met some of the passengers, and the cockpit door opened, and he was all bloody. They just applauded and screamed.
Yeah,
they were so happy.
I can imagine.
Yeah.
You know, I was going to ask Bob a question about the DC-9. I never flew the DC-9. I missed a good airplane, from what I understand, Bob. And I wish I had flown the 9 because it looked like it was such a comfortable cockpit. Things were, the two of you were close together in that Douglas aircraft. And do you remember what model it was? And we had about two or three different types. We had that little teeny one. And
the DC-910 was the first one, I think.
Okay.
The small one.
Yeah.
It had no leading edge devices. It just had I forget what they call that item up there on the leading edge, but it was a little bit hotter speed-wise with all of the things. But then the DC-9, was it 15 or 30?
30.
Came
yeah.
out, yeah. And it had leading edge devices, and had the cockpit layout was for lack of a better word, convenient. Everything was in a convenient
place. So you could
place.
Reach. You could reach switches and everything.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So one pilot could actually fly that airplane which you did. Well, which you did. I often thought about that.
Well, I mean, everybody thinks, you know, but what is that word, the medical word, when you're shocked or something and something else takes over? Anyway, that's, I can't think of the word.
Yeah, I know what you're talking about. I can't think of it either.
Yeah, but, you know, it was.
Now, had it been a 727 or something like that, where you have two people, of course.
727 is a little more spacious cockpit. And fortunately for us, the DC-9 is not as spacious, and Jim Hartley was able to grapple with this guy and get the gun away from him and immobilize him. And
was that at his own initiative? I mean, he just decided, Jim just decided that he could take the gun from the hydrant?
It happened after he was shot, so I would imagine it was
okay.
Happened after he was shot, so it happened. I'm sure it was a reflex action, and he was. It's amazing he was able to do it, having been mortally wounded.
Mm-hmm.
Really,
mm-hmm.
To me. But
well, I understand he's buried in Miami, down at Woodlawn.
Anita and I plan to go down there and visit the gravesite and maybe take a picture, lay some flowers or something. But yeah, he was a good guy. One of our friends. We had been together playing cards or something the previous weekend and had planned to go to his place over in Fort Lee the next weekend to socialize. So, yes, he was a good friend. Yeah.
Very good. Very good. Well, thank you very much. And if we continue to talk about this, there would be no need for a book that your son's writing. So we better leave a little bit for Robert to finish up the story. And how, by the way, about how far along is he in his sister's helping, right?
Yeah, he has written.
Okay.
But he still has a few more things. He wants to write about Bob's experience in Saudi Arabia. Too.
Yeah.
So,
Saudi Arabia experience, yeah,
yeah.
Yeah,
he wants to do that.
Very
but
good.
He has a lot of information. The FBI, they cooperated with him also.
Yeah. All right. Very good.
Yeah, we're looking for, you know, Jim Hartley's children. If they can shed any light on, you know, what, so
he's
forth.
He's still working on it. But
yeah, he's still trying to get some information.
This was one of the very first hijackings, wasn't it, for a person to have been killed like Jim
well,
was.
I think that was one of the first where someone got killed, yes. But, of course, they had the hijackings to Havana I don't know, I wouldn't say on a regular basis, but it wasn't any great big news when an airplane was diverted to Havana. But this had to be one of the first that was where there a death occurred, I think.
Yeah,
I think.
Yeah.
Vivo is a story in itself, and my son has all the information.
Oh, okay, okay.
He was suicidal, but there's a story about him.
He didn't live very much longer than.
He committed suicide.
Committed suicide.
Yeah. Halloween, the same year.
Halloween, okay.
Halloween, yeah, he committed suicide. In fact, someone asked me if I mailed him a kerchief or something as a joke. I said, that's a sick joke.
Yeah.
No.
Yeah.
But,
golly. Well, thank you for being here at the reunion, and we hope you enjoy your night tonight. I think it'll be a lot of fun. They've got me emceeing. I don't like to do this type of thing. And Jim Hart is the one that usually on our radio show is a host and helps us with it. We have about 7 hosts that work with me, and I'm called the producer, but sometimes I pick up the microphone. I can't shut up. And Jim was unable to be here, and so I guess I volunteered to take over the duties of emceeing this thing tonight, and I have no script whatsoever, just like we're doing it right now, improv, and I think it's sounding pretty good to me.
Well, I do too, and I'll just say that based on last year's experience where I attended, it went great, very well, and I'm sure it'll be the same this
evening.
Oh,
I hope so. I'm going to get butterflies here in front of so many people. So, but anyhow, thank you so much. I'm going to play an Eastern commercial. You know, I can actually play commercials on this thing.
And thank you for having me.
So much. Thank you so much. Let me plug this thing in here, and And I don't know which one I'm going to play, but I've got Landing. Oh, I'm going to play a Celebration. That's what we're having here at the Embassy Suites, a Celebration. So here we go with the music. How about that, Bob?
I love it.
It's just about to fade out in the background, and a wonderful interview. Bob, thank you so much. Don't get too far from the hotel now. We're counting on you tonight. Okay. Thanks, Anita. Appreciate it. We've got another gentleman here that is with the New Eastern Airlines, and he worked very hard to get hired by the New Eastern Airlines. Not everybody can get a job with Eastern Airlines. You know that. I want you to take this microphone right here, if you can reach it and hold it instead of in that cradle, because it's kind of got to be close to you. Yeah, pull your chair up here a little bit. And thank you, Bob. You bought one of my books. By golly, I can sign it for you, Bob, later. If you'll sign something for me. Okay, we're live, and I've got Mark Harden here, and he's with Eastern Airlines, the new Eastern Airlines. And you've got a tough act to follow, my man, with Captain Wilbur. I'm going to turn your microphone over here. I forgot to tell you how to do that. There's a little switch right there. Now say hello.
Hello.
There you go. Right. Mark Harden's with us. And hopefully we have a few of the new Eastern employees attend our reunion tonight. And I know your president, Ed Wiggle, will be with us tonight, and his lovely wife, Susan.
A company-wide memo out for everybody to join.
A little bit closer to that microphone. So how do you liking flying for Eastern?
Love it.
You do?
Love it, yeah.
And your family is an Eastern family, isn't
Correct,
it? Tell
yes.
us about that.
My mother was a flight attendant, a stewardess, excuse me.
For there
Eastern,
you go.
Starting in 1959. My father was a ground ops out of the Washington National Airport, which is actually where the two of them met. So there's a very special reason. If it weren't for Eastern, I wouldn't be here.
There you go.
Yeah.
All right. Okay.
They both met at Eastern.
Yeah. Very good. Very good. And you decided that at an early age that you wanted to kind of get into the airline business as well?
Right. Knee high to grasshopper. As soon as I looked up in the sky, I could see a plane. I knew I wanted to be up there.
Okay. And you did go with another airline, didn't you? I mean, you started off with not Eastern.
I've worked for quite a few major international airlines in different capacities, from training to international purser, and some management positions. I've run the gambit throughout the system.
All right.
So there's really not too many jobs that I haven't done there.
Tell me, you had a little difficulty getting on with Eastern initially, didn't you? But you were a determined young man.
I was, yes. I didn't let that hurdle overcome me, and I learned and got over that obstacle and was hired after that.
All right. And while you're flying for Eastern, and I'm sure you've flown into a lot of different foreign airports, and which we didn't have available to us because we had to fly our route, you know, and we couldn't. We did have some charter work, and of course we charted the hurricanes. As a matter of fact, I had a flight, a 757, when University of Miami won the national championship. And I flew their first flight of their season, their winning season. And they really had a hurricane out over the Atlantic when they had chartered the airplane. And we had the first class seats were $10,000 each. $10,000 each.
That's a lot.
And we had such passengers as Singer. I forgot his first name, but he was a founder of Burger King. And people like that were able to pay $10,000, but they were, of course, sponsors of the Hurricanes. I mean, they donated a lot of money to the program. But Jimmy Johnson was the coach that year. They won the national championship. But I delayed that flight for 3 hours because of the hurricane headed for Boston. And that's where we were going because they were playing Boston College. But have you had any interesting experiences on some of the charter flights that you can think
not
of?
Not that interesting by any means.
Not that,
no,
interesting?
Not that interesting?
How are your layovers? Are they long layovers or what? Do you turn around?
It depends. It depends. When you're flying some of the high-profile charters, sometimes they're very long days and short nights. And most airline crew members out there will know that. Others, when you're flying professional teams, sports teams, et cetera, or you may go out, you know, and have a longer layover because you stay with the aircraft, you stay in the location with the team or company. So it gives you the opportunity to really go out and adventure and see the area. So it just varies. It depends on the charter, depends on the operation.
How about your passengers or the ones that charter the flight? Are they pretty nice people, or they get a little bit tipsy, or, you know, have too much to drink? Like I had the Fleetwood Mac on one of my flights, and I threatened to throw them off the airplane, the Fleetwood Mac.
Well, you know, we haven't really had that happen to us yet, and most of our guests are very, they're just very calm and very happy, and a lot of times with their activities, if their sports teams, et cetera, they're very tired when they get on. So they use that opportunity to sleep and rest. The holiday vacationers going down to the Caribbean for cruises, et cetera, or to Cuba, they're very excited to be going down, but still extremely polite, extremely happy to be there. And so we don't seem to encounter too many disturbances at all in any case whatsoever.
How many crew members do you have in the cabin working flights?
We have 4 flight attendants and 2 pilots, 1 maintenance personnel, and depending upon where we're going, we have a GSC, which is a ground security coordinator.
Mm-hmm.
So we go pretty full with a crew.
And I understand now that not only have you flying the flights and all, but you're sharp enough to become one of their instructors, right?
Correct.
Yes. I know you wouldn't say you're sharp enough yourself, but I had to say that because you are.
Years of experience.
Yeah, and so you're instructing, and what's your duties there? What's your responsibilities?
Well, I was doing service training, teaching what I like to try and teach is a legacy service, legacy Eastern Airlines service training, and bring back the good, wonderful qualities that people remember of legacy Eastern Airlines into the new Eastern, and it seems to be going quite well.
Very good.
Yeah. As we get new service guidelines and procedures put in place, again, based on the charter operator, and once we go schedule, then you'll see a reminiscence of El Interamericano service, et cetera.
Very good.
Yeah.
And about how many flight attendants does Eastern have now?
We've just under 100, just around 100.
Are you still looking for flight attendants?
We hired a class that started last Monday.
Uh-huh.
So that class should be graduating in a few weeks.
Uh-huh.
Very happy to have them on board. And I know that we've got plans in the future to hire as well continuously as the new aircraft come on board.
Yeah.
And in fact, today I just saw a picture for the first time of our brand new 737 being built in the factory.
The MAX.
Yes.
Is it 37 MAX?
Yes.
Yeah.
It's on the production line.
Wow.
It's almost in full form, so it looks great.
Okay.
Really good.
Very
looking
good.
Forward to getting that in October, I think it is.
How many will we be getting?
I know from what I've read that Eastern has 10 on order and 10, what do they call it?
Options.
Right?
Options, yeah.
And then after that, of course, in 2019-ish or somewhere around there, I think what I was told is that we have the MRJs coming on board as well.
Okay, yeah. Very good. So. And they haven't talked, of course, we're going to listen to Ed Wiegel tonight, the president, and hopefully he'll give us some good news about starting scheduled service.
Yes, absolutely.
You don't want to talk about that, though, do you?
Yeah, definitely.
You do definitely want to talk about that? I don't.
Oh, no, you don't, I want to hear it.
No, I don't. I just want to know, you don't have any inside information as to when you'll be starting scheduled service, do you?
No.
That's what I meant.
What
I thought maybe you had.
That's what he'll have.
Yeah, there you go. You got to try anyhow. But they keep things pretty tight, close to the company, don't
Correct.
They? And I've had the pleasure of going up to your facilities there, 5A.
It's changed a lot from the humble beginnings we had.
Matter of fact, we are going to have a little poem tonight, I think. One of the young ladies had done a poem years and years ago about building 5A.
Yeah.
So I hope we get enough time to, after Ed speaks, to read that little poem. And, it looks like the facility is going to be real nice. And we've got one floor now or 2 floors?
It's the fourth floor and then part of the second floor.
Okay, very good.
Yeah, and more to come. So, the fourth floor, when we started, very, very basic. But now you walk in there, walls are painted. We've got wonderful Eastern historical posters up. It really looks gorgeous. They've done a really wonderful job. You walk in, it is Eastern Airlines.
Yeah.
So it's fantastic to go in there every morning.
Very good. Very good. Now, you're the head of I should have let you use the headset so you can hear yourself respond to these questions. That's why I keep putting the microphone up a little bit closer because you're fading out a little bit. You got to talk directly into these things. But what do they call it, the director of in-flight service? Is that
we have a director of in-flight service, Diane Kimball.
Mm-hmm.
And then we have a base manager, Kyoko Gardner. And then we have 3 flying supervisors, including myself. And followed that, we have the training staff and our flight attendant staff.
Okay. Mm-hmm. You know, I had the pleasure of going down when you had, I think it was class number 7,
yes,
a graduating class, when I came down to Miami. And I met a lady, a young lady. She's a young lady. She's 6 years old, so she's younger than I am. But 60 years old, and she'd just been hired as a captain with the New Eastern.
Linda.
Linda, that's yes. right, Linda.
Yes, she's
and,
wonderful.
She and I thought to myself.
Wonderful, wonderful pilot.
Is she?
Yes,
you've flown
she
with her?
Absolutely, oh, many
okay.
times. Great, yeah. great, great lady and super pilot.
I told her, I said, now, you're not starting a career because you only have 5 more years to fly a Part 121, so you can't be around too much longer.
So she and came to the best.
That's what she
enjoy.
Basically told me.
Mm-hmm.
She said that she saved the best for last.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah. What an attitude. That's great. And I think that carries out throughout the entire operations there from the marketing people. I've met the marketing people there and just a good group of people. It's nice
fantastic.
To go to work, isn't it?
They are fantastic. Every department we have is really great.
Yeah.
The fact that they work so hard to get the job done, to get the business. It's just
yeah.
terrific.
Yeah.
It's really terrific. And the results come out are fantastic.
Well, that's super. And it's just going to be a good airline, a great airline. Let's don't say good. Let's say great airline. And of course, everybody, all the old folks, the pioneers like myself, we're all wondering when we're going to get past privileges. And I think I'll ask Ed that tonight again. But it's really great having you with us, Mark, and hope you enjoy your evening tonight.
It's great to be
yeah.
here, and I'm thrilled to be here.
Oh, it's wonderful having you here. Thank you so much.
Well, thank you.
We're out of time. We just clocked out. We're actually 3 minutes over, but we're still broadcasting, and we're going to close the door now, and I'm going to land the airplane. We got an actual landing sound. And you want to put a headset on? Hit there, right there. See if you can hear this. But this is pretty these applications here, and so I'm going to put the airplane on the ground, and by just hitting this button right here, and can you hear anything? I still see none of that for that sound, and it's good. So that signs us out. Folks, it's been great that you are being able to listen to a broadcast that this is the first time I've ever done this, and that's pre-recorded this right here at the convention site, the reunion site. Instead of a convention, we call it a reunion because that's what we do. We've met here a couple of years now, and pioneers meeting the new Eastern Airlines, and they getting to know us a little bit, and I think Ed said well at the last reunion when he said they've got to do a good job because we provided so much foundation for you guys to build on. And it's great because we're all rooting for you. And we'll all be flying domestically when you get those passes, and we'll pay for it. It's been great. Thank you so much. And I want to see if I can sign out for some bumper music. And this is the bumper music I have chosen. And see what you think of this one.
Napa Know-How. A Napa guy knows that by the foot, there's no better ride than an old station wagon. Room for six people facing forward, two people facing backward, and a whole lot of luggage, lumber, and bicycles haphazardly strapped to the roof. If you can parallel park that beast, you can park anything. And with some quality parts and a little Napa know-how, you can keep your land ship running longer, stronger. It's not obsolete. It's a rare treasure. That's Napa Know-How.
Napa Know-How.
Hey, I'm here at your Metro PCS store. What's the best deal I can get for switching over?
How does a free smartphone sound?
Sounds good, but is it a tiny smartphone?
Nope, 5-inch HD screen.
Good brand?
Great brand. Samsung, and it's a Galaxy.
So I got a free Samsung Galaxy?
Yeah, you're a tough man to bargain with.
Everyone gets a free Samsung Galaxy On 5 at Metro PCS. Switch today and get a free smartphone after instant rebate. Yes, a free Samsung Galaxy. Metro PCS. Wireless. Figured out. Coverage not available in some areas. Sales tax not included. Not valid for numbers currently on the T-Mobile network. See store for details, terms and conditions, and network info.